Welcome to SCOTUSCast, defending habeas relief on alternate grounds edition. Thank you for tuning in. On January 14, 2015, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Jennings v. Stevens. The issue in this case involves a federal habeas petitioner who sought relief based upon three theories of ineffective assistance of counsel. The district court granted relief on two theories, but rejected the third. The question in this case was whether the prisoner must file a separate notice of appeal and a motion for a certificate of appealability in order to rely upon his third theory, which the district court had rejected in defending against the state appeal. In an opinion delivered by Justice Scalia, the court held by a vote of 6-3 that the prisoner in this case was not required to file a cross-appeal or seek a certificate of appealability to rely on his third theory on appeal, because the theory was a defense of a favorable judgment below on alternate grounds. Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Ginsburg, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan joined the opinion of the court. Justice Thomas filed a dissenting opinion, which Justices Kennedy and Alito joined. The judgment of the Fifth Circuit was reversed, and the case remanded for consideration of Jennings' third claim of ineffective assistance of counsel. To discuss the case, we have Kent Scheidegger, who is the legal director of the Criminal Justice Legal Foundation. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Scheidegger.
On January 14th, the United States Supreme Court decided the case of Jennings v. Stevens. The case decided an issue regarding the claims that might be considered on appeal when the prisoner succeeds in a habeas corpus petition and the state is the party appealing. Robert Jennings was a habitual criminal with a long history of robbery and other crimes. In 1988, he entered a Houston store to rob it and murdered police officer Elston Howard, who just happened to be there for an unrelated reason, shooting him four times in the back and head. At trial, his lawyer presented a minimal case in mitigation, presenting the testimony of a jail chaplain who believed that Jennings was a changed man and was not incorrigible. In subsequent habeas corpus proceedings, Jennings' new lawyers made several arguments that his trial lawyer had been ineffective. They said he should have called his mother and sister to testify to his disadvantaged childhood. They claimed that a report that trial counsel had not discovered indicated that Jennings had mild mental retardation and mild organic brain dysfunction. Finally, they claimed that trial counsel was ineffective for beginning his closing argument by stating that he could not quarrel with a decision to sentence Jennings to death before going on to make an argument against a death sentence. The state trial court rejected all of these arguments. The testimony of the mother and sister would have had both positive and negative aspects for the defense, and the decision not to call them was within the bounds of reasonable trial strategy. The missing psychological report was also double-edged in that the evaluating psychologist believed that Jennings was malingering. A more recent psychological evaluation was unpersuasive because it was contradicted by Jennings' demonstrated high-level functioning, including completing his GED and 40 hours of college credit while incarcerated. The trial lawyer's can't quarrel statement was a plausible strategy. The Texas Court of Criminal Appeals wrote an opinion denying habeas relief on the witness question and the psychological evidence. It did not think the closing argument point was worth further consideration. On federal habeas corpus, the federal district judge did find merit in Jennings' claims regarding mitigating evidence. The district judge did not find any merit in the claim that the closing argument was ineffective assistance. He said, open quote, "It is clear from the record that counsel was trying to identify with the jurors and to convince them that he was a reasonable man who shared their interests in a safe community. In that posture, he argued that they should still impose a life sentence. In light of the extremely weak mitigation case, the state habeas court's conclusion that this was a plausible strategy was not unreasonable." The district judge issued a conditional writ of habeas corpus, requiring the state to release Jennings unless it gave him a new sentencing hearing. Release is the only relief a court sitting in habeas corpus has jurisdiction to provide, so So conditions such as retrial or resentencing are attached as a way of effectively requiring relief that the court cannot directly order. The state appealed the grant of habeas corpus relief. Jennings did not cross-appeal the denial of his claim regarding closing argument. Appeals in habeas corpus cases have long been subject to requirements different from those for other civil cases. Both Congress and the Supreme Court have long recognized that the vast majority of petitions and appeals by prisoners seeking habeas corpus relief have no merit. Before 1996, a prisoner who wanted to appeal a denial of habeas relief had to obtain a certificate of probable cause, although the state did not need a certificate to appeal a grant of habeas relief. In 1996, Congress changed the name to a Certificate of Appealability and added a requirement that the judge issuing the certificate specify the issue or issues that meet the standard of a substantial showing. On appeal in the Jennings case, the Fifth Circuit found that the omitted mitigating evidence was less compelling than the district judge believed and more easily refuted or used in a double-edged manner by the prosecution. Therefore, it was unlikely to have made a difference and was not a ground for overturning the judgment under the relevant standard. Jennings raised his closing argument claim as an additional ground for affirming the judgment, but the Fifth Circuit declined to consider it because Jennings had neither filed a cross-appeal nor obtained a certificate of appealability. The court acknowledged that there was a division among the circuit courts regarding this requirement when the state was the party taking the appeal. The Supreme Court took up the case, limited to that question, to resolve that division. The Seventh Circuit had held that cross appeals are unnecessary and the entire certificate of appealability requirement does not apply when the habeas petitioner does not ask for anything other than affirmance of the relief he was granted in the district court. In reaching this conclusion, the Seventh Circuit applied the standard rule from civil appeals that a party who prevails in the trial court need not cross appeal if he does not seek any expansion of the relief he was actually granted in the trial court. An earlier Fifth Circuit case had held that a certificate of appealability is required if the petitioner wants the Court of Appeals to review a claim rejected by the district court. In his petition for certiorari, Jennings acknowledged that the Fifth Circuit precedent was correct, but claimed that ineffective assistance in the penalty phase was a single claim, not one that could be divided up into a separate claim for each perceived failing of defense counsel. If the Supreme Court had accepted this argument, it would have had to define what a claim is, a decision that would have had a far-reaching effect for other aspects of habeas corpus law. For example, federal courts must defer to reasonable resolution of claims by state courts. If ineffective assistance in the penalty phase in its entirety is a single claim, then a state court's rejection of such a claim would be subject to deference as to the entire range of the trial lawyer's performance. This would be true even if the defendant had never presented some of his allegations against trial counsel to the state courts, but, as often happens, had thought of some of them for the first time after his case reached federal habeas corpus. When Jennings filed his brief on the merits in the Supreme Court, however, he shifted gears and argued for the Seventh Circuit's approach. This approach, if accepted, would create broader rights on appeal for inmates who prevail on any claim in district court, and it would avoid, for the time being, any need for the Supreme Court to define what constitutes a claim. He also reiterated his earlier argument, consistent with Fifth Circuit precedent, as a backup. The state of Texas submitted a creative argument based on the idea that the relief in habeas corpus extends beyond the requirement that the state retry or resentence the petitioner to include a requirement that the new trial or sentencing proceeding not repeat any of the errors identified from the first trial. Under this theory, every error identified adds incrementally to the restrictive force of the habeas corpus judgment. And a petitioner who wants to argue additional claims on appeal not accepted by the district court is therefore trying to expand his relief and must cross appeal after first obtaining a certificate of appealability. My own role in this case was largely in support of the petitioner's original argument. Based on the unique history of appeal in habeas corpus cases, the thrust of Congress's amendment to the appeal statute was to limit the issues on appeal to those that a judge has identified as having at least potential merit. The congressional goal would best be served, it seems, by excluding from the appeal any claims that the petitioner neither prevailed on in district court nor obtained a certificate of appealability for. It is now common in capital cases, our brief pointed out, for petitioners to load up their petitions with dozens of claims, sometimes over 100, most patently meritless. It would be unwise to allow a single claim that is found to have merit to open the gate for what Justice Jackson called a flood of worthless ones. However, subdividing claims into subclaims for this purpose would seem to be a counterproductive complication and source of delay, and avoiding delay was the main purpose of the reform. The Supreme Court decided 6-3 to go with the simplest rule, which is the Seventh Circuit rule, and leave the problem of dealing with floods of frivolous claims to another day. The majority opinion by Justice Scalia emphasized that the usual rule on appeal is that the appellee can raise any argument that he raised in the district court in support of that court's judgment, carefully distinguishing the judgment from the opinion that supports it. If the judgment says, as it did in this case, simply that the state must either release the petitioner or resentence him, any argument properly preserved in the lower court can be argued in support of that result. If this rule does result in a flood of frivolous claims on appeal, the majority opinion says, that is for Congress to deal with. Justice Thomas, joined by Justices Kennedy and Alito, dissented, accepting the state's theory. That is, because the federal court's decision on each claim would be binding on the state in any future trial or resentencing, a decision of the Court of Appeals accepting such a claim when it was rejected by the district court does expand a petitioner's rights and therefore requires a certificate of appealability. Given the way it was decided, the Supreme Court's decision in Jennings establishes a simple rule. A habeas petitioner who prevails in the district court and obtains relief there can argue any ground in the Court of Appeals that he argued in the district court, regardless of whether the district judge accepted it, as long as success on that ground would not expand the relief granted, narrowly defined by the wording of the conditional release order. This rule will only affect a handful of non-capital cases for the simple reason that very few non-capital habeas petitions succeed in the district court. The potential effects for capital cases are larger, where more petitions are granted and they contain a great many more issues. The decision will probably not be of any lasting benefit to Jennings himself. The case goes back to the Fifth Circuit to consider the merits of a claim that has been rejected by all of the many judges to consider it to date. We can expect that the end result will still be that the state court judgment stands. While the rule established in this case is broad in terms of what issues may be appealed, it is also narrow in that it does not affect other burning questions in the law of habeas corpus. In particular, we still do not know what defines a claim, an important concept in the context of deference to state court judgments, successive petitions, and the statute of limitations. The answer to that question must once again wait for another case.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.